IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat. Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Kevalramani, and today I have with me Shambhavi and Anirudh, and we're going to be talking about the Transgender Persons Rights Bill, which was passed in Lok Sabha in August this year. There's been lots of controversy around that bill.
It was also passed in Rajya Sabha.
It was also passed in Rajya Sabha,
yeah,
okay. So it's basically now law.
Yeah. Yep.
And we're going to be looking at that law, and we're going to be trying looking at what it means, what it gets right, what it gets wrong, what are the controversies surrounding it, and how we should be approaching this issue of transgender rights. But before we get into all of those sort of complicated political discussions, let's just first try and understand what is gender. How is it different from sex? How is it different from sexuality? Or is it all the same thing?
So, right. I think our idea of gender has to come from biology, but instead I think it comes from society. So we see men and women as two genders, and we have traditionally seen that for a long period of time. Before science actually caught up with the understanding of what drives a person to be a man or a person to be a woman, we had all sorts of wild theories. There was this theory that I think if a sperm came from the right testicle, then it was a boy sperm. If it came from the left testicle of a man, it was a girl sperm.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Yeah. So it was wild. And after we started studying genetics, we actually saw that there were two chromosomes. There was X and Y chromosome that were identifying male and female. So females have XX and male have XY. And I think we first made that observation and we decided, okay, that is it. Because there is only boys and girls, there is XY and XX. And we did not actually study that in further detail for a long period of time. What happened then is there was a guy called Swire who did this study where he found that there were women who had the Y chromosome in them. But they were physically women. And you don't understand why it's known as a Swire syndrome. And since then, a lot more studies have been attempted to figure out whether the story of gender ends with XX and XY or not. And what we have found is that there is an entire spectrum of physical conditions where you do not actually always replicate what is XX and XY in your cell. And then a lot of study went into this. And what we found was that the Y chromosome is more or less like a regulator. So it's not that you are a boy because you have the Y chromosome. All of the maleness features are actually encoded within the other 22 chromosomes that you have. And the Y chromosome simply decides whether those maleness features are to be switched on or not.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, suppose having male genitalia was dependent on the Y chromosome and something went wrong with the Y chromosome, you were literally screwed.
Yeah.
Right? So it makes sense to put it on the other chromosomes, which have a sister chromosome that you get from your mother as well.
Yeah.
So that there's always backup.
Yeah.
Right? So eventually over time, all of the important physical functions were moved on to the other chromosomes, and Y is simply there to as a switch to turn on or turn off.
So when you say male features, dogs, this is a quick question. You're talking about stuff like facial hair, high levels of testosterone, stuff like that, right?
So everybody has them, but whether they get switched on or not is dependent upon the Y chromosome being a regulator. And then because it is like a fan regulator. It is not an on and off switch. It can regulate to levels. Right? So then you have an entire spectrum of people who are from extremely feminine for what we define as a feminine appearance to extremely masculine, again, to what is our societal definition. This is not a biological definition. This is our societal way of looking at male and female. But because the idea that there are only two genders was so deeply ingrained into our societal thinking by then, that this idea of spectrum and that there were people who would not fit into the definitions was particularly hard for us to understand. And so for such a long time, we have had a lot of issues with accepting these people as part of a society. So even the WHO for a long time had put transgender in their chapter on mental health, it wasn't that in sexual health, it was actually considered a mental disorder. So what then is transgender? Transgender is somebody who does not identify with the gender that they were assigned at birth. So if you are physically a boy at birth and you're assigned a boy gender, but you think that you are a woman, so you self-identify as a woman, then you're considered to be a trans person. This is different from a gay man who is born a boy, who identifies as a man, but would prefer a male as a sexual partner instead of a female. And then you can have combinations in the middle. So you can have straight trans men or gay trans men. So all of these combinations exist. They, if you think from a biological point of view, are normal. Because anything abnormal, nature would remove. So they are normal. They exist. It is just a societal acceptance for these have been particularly hard to gain.
And that's really where this bill comes in, right? I mean, the whole utopian dream of the trans bill was it would finally correct a lot of the injustice that the trans community has been through. And it's quite interesting to me, especially because of the way that India's attitudes towards trans people have changed over the centuries. Up till relatively recently in our past, trans people were relatively accepted. They had a particular social status. They were like brought into weddings, for example. They were invited to the birth of a child and stuff like that.
Even I think in the olden days, right, for the royal families, the women particularly used to have a lot of trans people around them, right? Yeah, because the men were not allowed to go into female palaces, but the trans were like bodyguards as well.
So that's a bit of confusion I have. I don't know if castrated males, like who are involuntarily castrated, like the Mughals, for example, had a habit of getting the manliest men they could find and castrating them and making them guards.
Okay.
So I don't think they fall within the definition of trans.
Technically, in the bill they do.
That's really weird because the fundamental idea is that you self-identify as another gender and that's what makes
you... So the bill actually gives you an option of self-identifying, but in the definition itself, it is included.
So I think we'll come back to that later in this conversation. But I mean, I recently found out that the genesis of the social taboo against trans people that is just so prevalent today actually lies in British persecutions of trans people in the late 18th, early 19th century. So trans people were considered to be, because they're so out of the pale of the Victorian male, right? They are considered as these terrible examples of Oriental decadence and so on and so forth. There's really, really, a lot of them were hounded to death and stripped of their properties and stuff like that. And I think the 2014 version of the trans bill that was introduced in Parliament actually had a provision that outlawed trans people from begging, which just seemed like a unnecessarily... So
this is the one that government introduced.
Yeah, the one that the government introduced, and then they were forced to take it back, and then they've sneakily put it back into Parliament now, right? That said, they do seem to have made some changes in this bill. But from what I've read, the testimonies of the LGBTQ community, people who have been involved, who have consulted with Parliament, tried to get them to make a bill that's just freaking humane. That's all they're asking for. MPs would apparently just say, oh, you are Ardha Narishwara. This, I mean, look, I get the idea. You would like to believe that India was the most tolerant and progressive place because you had like one god who was supposedly half male, half female. But that's not what trans people are. Yeah. They're not half this gender, half that. They lie on this spectrum, and their biological features do not need to necessarily be the same as the way they identify inside.
Yeah, see, that is one of the problems of, you know, leveraging myths and mythology to try and create something new, or to make it more acceptable. Yeah. It can actually convolute the issue much more. But Anirudh, you spoke about sort of the history of the bill. So I had sort of looked at where this conversation begins. A lot of it begins in 2014 with the Supreme Court verdict. But in 2014, there was also a bill put out as a private member's bill, which from what I understood, I haven't read the bill, from what I understood from reading about people talking about the bill, was that it was a much better bill than what we have today.
It was one of the very few private member bills that has actually passed through any house in the parliament. So the Rajya Sabha actually passed it, and Tiruchi Siva, who was a DMK MP, sat and answered all questions and was like very, put his foot down and said that this bill is going to pass today.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a more humane bill. Even today, so because the president still hasn't signed the bill, a lot of the activists who are supporting the trans community are saying that please don't sign the bill that the government has put forward.
Hmm.
But can we please talk about the bill that Tiruchi Siva had
proposed? Okay, so this has been passed by both the houses, the current bill, but yet it's not got the president's signature on it.
No.
Okay, so it's effectively not law yet.
Technically not a law yet.
Technically not law yet. Okay. The other sort of change that you were talking about, Anirudh, was that the new bill that came about was 2016, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it and is then 2016.
This was reintroduced right now in July and passed in August with very little or no conversation at all.
Yeah.
And that's one of the criticisms that I'm reading about, which is that this could have been referred to a select committee. It could have been referred to somebody to look at, given the sort of problems in the bill. But that didn't happen. It was passed without any conversation.
This is true of a lot of bills. I think in the last Lok Sabha, only 1/4 of the bills were actually, so whatever is standard for the number of bills that go to standing committee, only 1/4 of those actually went for any kind of scrutiny.
Yeah, which is an argument for people who keep, who are very happy with the fact that, oh, you know, suddenly parliament is so much more efficient and is, you know, doing so much more work. Well, it need not be quality.
As is quite well exemplified by this bill.
Okay, so let's get into this bill. Okay, first let's just do right by what our lawmakers have done. What is right in this bill? Because the bill does a number of things, right? It defines what is a transgendered individual. It provides them certain rights. Firstly, it creates a system whereby they can get a certification to identify as transgender.
That's not a good thing of the bill. The good thing of the bill is
at the moment, I'm just talking about what the bill does.
Yeah.
Then we'll talk about whether it's good or bad. So it defines.
It allows people to self-identify. I think that is the first good. The first thing that it does is allows people the right to self-identify.
And in that self-identification, you need to get certification.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So that's one of the things that it does. It sets up a process whereby you need to get certified. Another thing it does is it bestows certain rights upon you in terms of tackling certain kinds of discrimination. So in education, in government schemes, in welfare, in healthcare, and so on and so forth. It also criminalizes certain kinds of actions against people who are transgender and therefore, and also prescribes a certain period of punishment, I think 6 months to 2 years in case of certain cases. And that's one of the things that's been criticized also by some of the activists. And that's some of the broad sort of things that it does. And it creates a body of the government, I can't remember the name, which sort of oversees all of these things, which is another problematic thing, according to me, at least, given that there is a centralized body which is going to do all of this. So let's just first look at what does it do right. From a definition point of view, does it get things right? Self-identification is one thing that it gets right.
Self-identification, I think it gets right. The definition is that you do not identify with the gender that you're assigned at birth, which I think is...
I mean, sure, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
right?
That's the definition. But definition-wise,
that seems more or less okay.
Yeah, but then they go ahead and shoot themselves in the foot because first clause says you can self-identify and then says, oh, but you also have to go and convince this third person sitting in a court somewhere that you identify yourself as a trans.
Yeah, ideally a district magistrate.
Yeah.
Which is not a good place to be.
And like, I don't understand, I mean, the bill seems just so totally divorced from social realities. It doesn't seem like any trans person was actually involved in the drafting of the bill, that they were only like brought in during the consultation process, because they would have been able to tell these freaking parliamentarians from the very outset that, look, boss, people, I mean, they get asked really, really personal, invasive questions just in normal day-to-day living. Imagine having to get a medical certificate. And Shambhavi and I were just talking about this earlier today about the lack of like access to good trained medical professionals. Imagine the kind of discrimination you have to go through. Then you have to go to a freaking district magistrate, get the certificate just to get negative rights, right? Just the right to not be discriminated against for being who you are. You do not get any actual positive rights as it were. There doesn't seem to be any affirmative action from the side of the government to tackle the kind of social attitudes that strip trans people of their dignity.
Yeah, I think it put a lot of onus on trans people we have marginalized so much. I don't really see why we are putting the onus on them to a proof that they are human. And then all just so that they get a seat in college. I mean, that's something that they should get anyways. I mean, you don't need a certificate for that.
But see, that's one of the problems, you know, when you create At any point of time, when you are creating a separate, and I'm going to use class very loosely here, when you're creating a separate class or a separate category of identity in a system on the basis of which the people who are asking you to create this identity, so the parliamentarians, lawmakers are saying, we're creating this separate identity. Belonging to this particular group of people is going to privilege you in certain kinds of ways. While we are recognizing that we are creating this separate category because you have been disadvantaged over the years, yet now you're going to get certain privileges. Therefore, we're going to create these hurdles for you to then identify as
but
this
that's
individual.
That's the thing, right? They're not getting privileges.
Yeah.
The only thing the builders are saying that you're not going to get discriminated against.
And exactly. That only happens if you, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that happens if you have a certificate saying that you're a transgender person, which you have to go through all those hoops to get in the first
place. So that's the thing. Essentially, what the law is doing is telling people that you will be getting certain facilities. Let's not even use the word privilege. Certain facilities if you are a member of this subset of society. But to become a member of this subset of society, you need to get registered because now we are attaching certain facilities to it or privileges to it, which is ludicrous because you're firstly creating that because you're identifying that it is a disadvantaged subset of society. So it just makes no sense at all.
It makes no sense.
The other sort of interesting thing that I was reading about was the when I mentioned this, that, you know, the fact that in case of violence against somebody who's transgendered, the punishment is set between 6 months and 2 years. And there's a criticism of this saying, look, why just 2 years, given that you've sort of amended laws with regard to violence against women, and the minimum penalty for that is about 7 years. Again, that's a strange sort of conformation, right?
Yeah.
It's obviously, I mean, parliamentarians don't seem to consider trans people to have an actual gender. It doesn't seem like they think of trans people as fully people.
Yeah.
That's the only logical explanation I can come up with for this.
The reason that you've created, let's just look at this way. Violence against women, certain kind of violence, would entail stricter punishment because it is far more endemic to the society. It's far more common in the society. Women are traditionally discriminated against and they are seen, multiple sort of historical, sociological reasons why you would want to have separate categories of cases of violence against women. It's strange that today you're basically by creating these distinctions and saying that, okay, but in this case, you will get only 2 years. You're saying that, oh, violence against you is not as significant a problem and to merit something like this. And it is absurd.
It is absurd.
You would want to at least, hey, it's again, okay, this happens in India, right? I mean, against, say, for example, this might be controversial, against the, say, the Dalit community. Violence against the Dalit community in different kinds of forms might entail different kinds of punishment. Against women, different kinds of punishment. And here you're identifying this as saying, okay, you're not as privileged or as disadvantaged as these people. Just.
And I mean, more importantly, I think the fact that the bill focuses exclusively on trans women who are basically men who self-identify and then might go through the sex change surgery to become women. The fact that sexual assault is framed as something that happens only to trans women. The fact that it, again, it just generally seems like the bill is written from the perspective of the only trans people I've ever seen are, you know, the people who've asked me for money on the streets, and they tend to be men who are either dressed up as women or actually trans women. There is absolutely no understanding that this is a huge spectrum of people, of an array of possible self-identifications, an array of possible sexualities, but the bill does not consider any of them.
Yeah.
The only people that it considers are the trans women. And even then, it does an absolutely shit job of correcting the injustice they've been through.
It's really weird because I think the bill was supposed to bring them into mainstream, but they actually end up creating them into a more distinct group than, you know, trying to bring them to the same level as men and women, what traditionally we would consider as men and women.
Yeah.
Right? Now they're just like classified into an even more stricter kind of a group.
Yeah.
And you're like, now you are different from us.
Yeah.
It sounds as if like that's what's being done.
Yeah, right? That's what's being done, right? You ended up created, like I was saying, an additional subset of society which needs certain kinds of treatment separately, which is just even more problematic, which is exactly counterproductive to bringing them in the mainstream. The one of the other points that I wanted to discuss was this bit about, so a lot of what the bill does in terms of protection is essentially outlawing discrimination on grounds of gender across a number of domains. But one of the criticisms that people have said, have sort of put forward, is that, well, it, while it does that and that's fine, it should have gone further. There should have been affirmative action, reservations, and so on and so forth. I wanted to get a sense from both of you of, you know, how do we see that? Because that would again do the same thing. It wouldn't mainstream them, but it would create a subset. Reservations is anyway a problematic topic in India.
Yeah.
And if you were to do this, you would create the same. But then the counter argument is that, well, you know, every other person really gets, every other subset gets reservation. If you're creating a subset, why not do that?
I mean, that's, I see that argument, but at least for me, that's not necessarily the way I see reservation. I see that the primary purpose of reservation is to increase representation of various groups at different levels of society and the economy. And trans people, I mean, as we were talking, I don't know if it was 2014, 2016 bill, I'm a bit confused now, but the bill that outlawed begging just is just so revealing. This is for a lot of trans people who are discriminated against at every level, who are not able to get jobs, who are not able to fend for themselves. Begging is the only source of livelihood they have, and then you outlaw that. I think is indicative of just generally the difficulties that trans people go through in this country. I would think definitely that reservations for trans people in education, just normalizing their presence in public spaces, has enormous value. And I think that it by far outweighs the benefits of, I don't know, yet another rich group like the Marathas deciding overnight that they're OBCs and then demanding reservation.
Shambhavi?
I am typically usually against reservations, even the reservations for women. I don't understand them. I think though in this particular case, at least in some context, for example, in the parliament itself, because you're going to make bills which affect the transgender community, I think you necessarily need representation of that community. It's not a small community. I mean, the 2014 census showed that there were about 5 lakh people in India. And it is not easy to answer, I'm a transgender, in a government survey.
Yeah.
So the fact must be that we have a lot more. Some of the transgender community representatives think that that number is probably 6 times more of the 5 lakh that the government found. So I agree with Anirudh. We need representation in some places. But I think this is also going to be a societal problem. It is not just because of reservations that necessarily members of the transgender community might come in and apply for jobs or be a part of the college. And just because they are there does not mean that they will not get discriminated upon by their peers. I think that that the change in that attitude is not going to be resolved by reservations. It can only be resolved through education, which is a far more important feature. And I think this is where if we start with, say, the parliament, if we see more transgender community people on TV participating, making their voice vocal in big ticket events, then there will be an increased acceptance. I think till then, like Anirudh said, like our concept of transgender community seems to be limited to the people we see on the streets. And that automatically has now gotten linked to a negative image about the community. And that needs to change. It brings back to my mind an incident that I was traveling on the Mumbai local train once with my mother. And there were two trans people in the compartment. And I went and stood next to them because my mother like ran to me. She's like, no, Shambha, you come to the other side. And I think removing that hesitancy is something that I think the bill should have focused on, is something that we should focus on. I mean, everything else will fall into place. But I don't think we are even remotely close to identifying what the problem is and actually tackling that problem.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, it's always going to be very difficult to legislate social change.
Yeah.
It's going to be very, very complicated to do that. But it could have at least moved in that direction, is what we're arguing.
At least in terms of shifting the norm a little bit, if the bill had clearly and unambiguously declared that these are equal citizens and there is no obligation on me to prove that I am a man, why does somebody who is biologically born as a woman but then decides that they want to identify as a man have to go through all those hoops just to not be discriminated against? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That's a fascinating conversation. I'm walking away far more informed, I think, At least now I get a better definition of gender, sex, everything. Rampal, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much, Anirudh.
I think one of the things that the bill could have done is just remove the identification of gender altogether. It just makes things so much easier. We are all equal. We are all citizens of India and we all enjoy the same rights. Why do I need to tell anybody that I am a woman or not?
It's not the state's business.
Alright, so with that, we're going to call it a day. Thank you so much, Shambhavi. Thank you so much, Anirudh. And thank you so much for listening to us. And if you have any comments, please do share them with us. Thank you.
Thanks.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.